ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Alicia Simmons.
And I'm Lee Boucher.
As historians, we've spent years digging into the lives of people who've changed history, for better or for worse.
So naturally, we are extremely qualified to gossip about them.
And because they're dead, they can't sue.
In our podcast, we sift through Australia's most notable and notorious characters, giving you our unfiltered takes.
Find it by searching for The Dead Can't Sue on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Tegan Taylor and this is Life Matters, where your stories shape the national conversation. Has the rise of AI got you worried about how secure your job is? Do you feel like you lack the skills to take a leap and chase the work you really love? How are you feeling about your career right now and your career prospects? Well, this morning I have just the people to help you move past that stuck feeling. And then in about 40 minutes, who pays when a favour ends up in an emergency room bill? The aunties will weigh in. It's all coming up here on ABC Radio National. Tell me if this feels familiar. You're looking out at the world at the moment, and then you're looking at your job and you're thinking, am I going to be obsolete in the next year or two? The robot apocalypse feels more imminent than ever. Or maybe you're just unsure if your job is what you actually want to be doing, but you don't feel like you've got the skills or the confidence to think about doing something else. Well, my guests today say neither of these statements are true. They say you are not your job title. You are a valuable asset with knowledge, experience, personality, and a wide suite of skills that could be transferred to any number of meaningful jobs out there. Jobs which need to be done by a human and not AI. Here with me is Jane Jackson, an author and career management coach with more than two decades of experience, and Glenn James, an author and host of the Money, Money, Money podcast. He worked for 15 years as a financial advisor and now runs a media company, and they are here to talk you through the practical steps that you can take to see yourself as the valuable asset you are. Jane, Glenn, welcome to Life Matters.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on.
It's such a delight to have you both with me. We're asking people to share their stories of moving through career stuckness today, but I want to hear yours first. Glenn, you run a media business. Before that, you were a financial advisor, but you started your working life as a tradie. How did you get there, here from there?
Well, I think for me, you know, I was in my early 20s when I made some big calls, and that's obviously easier when you don't have three kids and a mortgage and all the responsibilities of life. But my later transition to effectively the media company now, that was a bigger step, and that took a lot of work. It took a lot of research, and it wasn't easy, but it was worth it type vibe. And I think, you know, whatever age that we are, whether you are 22 listening and you're looking at, oh, I'm not sure I love what I'm doing, or you're 55, I can tell you right now, you're going to feel the same thing, because really we don't change as humans. Like we've all got feelings, and we all see risk, we all see opportunity, we all see, like, age isn't a big part. However, the earlier we are, before these big rocks kick into our life, it could be easier.
Sure. And Jane, you've helped thousands of people do that, navigate career crises, but you've had your own times where you felt pretty stuck. Can you tell me about that?
Oh, yes. I've been through many career transitions in my career so far, but the most difficult time was when I moved from Singapore to Sydney, and I didn't have a network in Sydney, and I was going through a divorce at the time. I had teenage children. I had my mother, who didn't speak English, coming over with me, and a very grumpy cat too. And so there were a lot of responsibilities and concerns, because Sydney was a new city, Australia was a new country, and I had such a minimal network that I thought, how on earth am I going to be able to integrate and rebuild my life? And luckily, through a lot of networking and thinking, okay, if I don't take control of my own career and my life, I'm not really not going to be able to survive and look after everybody that I love. I was able to join a global outplacement company as a career coach. And because I was a corporate trainer before, and also I've made multiple career transitions, I think they saw that I was able to share my story in order to help others as well.
So if you're listening and you're going, well, what would they know? I've had all these barriers. It sounds like you both have really navigated some stuff to get to where you are today. But there are a lot of big, scary things looming just in general at the moment, Jane. How are people feeling right now in careers broadly?
Well, in my experience and also from a lot of the research that I always keep on top of, currently there's a lot of concern because there's been this rapid development with AI. People are erroneously thinking that, oh, AI is going to take my job. And therefore, they're keeping their heads down. They're trying not to create too much noise about it because they're concerned that there will be redundancies. Now, there have been many, many redundancies across the board in all sectors. Well, it's always ongoing with redundancies. But in 2025 and now, it's really been very concerning. So people are you've heard the phrase job hugging. People are...
Have I? What's job hugging?
Job hugging, yes. Because the thing is that in the past, there was natural attrition and people were thinking, oh, okay, what else can I do? I want a bit more money. I want a promotion or I want, you know, to change careers. And there were employment possibilities. But now, because the market's so tight, they're thinking, oh, you know, I better not resign because I don't know how long it's going to take me to land the next role. And actually, I have found that in 2025, roles that would normally take for, say, middle management, maybe 3 to 4 months to land the next role, they were taking 5 to 6 months instead. So the job market was a lot tighter. It's starting to pick up a little bit now, but there's still a lot of concern. And people are not leaving and creating openings for other people to take them. So the job market's tight. People are holding tight because they're not sure if they're going to be replaced and there'll be a redundancy.
And there's the big cost of living crisis as well. Like, Glenn, you're our money guy here. Is that part of it too?
Yeah, I think there is. But before I answer that, it's interesting that, Jane, when you said job hugging, how wild is it that 3-4 years ago, there was the quiet quitting where everyone's like, I'm not leaving. I'm just going to rock in and keep my head down, walk around with the Penske file, like all that stuff. Seinfeld reference. You're welcome. And now it's like, oh my gosh, I'm so aware that I can't. Anyway, but the cost of living. So what it does when money's tight, obviously we take less risk because we don't have that cushion there. But I will say there are people out there where it is not a cost of living crisis. It is a cost of spending crisis. So there are a lot of people, they could be listening, that have good incomes. They've got good financial status, quote unquote, and they think they can't move or re-pivot because money's too tight. Well, if you've used Uber Eats in the last week, I don't want to hear from you. We need to go back to controlling what we can control. And if we want to make a change, we need to get serious. And I'm not saying it's not expensive out there, but we need to actually look at our budget and go, well, do we have an emergency fund? Are we actually setting up a platform that in a couple of years we might be able to pivot? So I don't know. It just adds another layer when things are tight financially. Absolutely.
Glenn, first of all, how dare you? Second of all, you're listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor. I'm chatting with Glenn James, who's the host of the Money, Money, Money podcast, and Jane Jackson, a career management coach. She's been doing it for more than 2 decades. She's the host of the Your Career podcast and the author of Navigating Career Crossroads, How to Thrive When Changing Direction. So yes, we are talking about career stuckness today and how to unstick yourself. Jackie, you started your career as a lab technician. What are you doing now?
I'm a police officer.
Okay, that's a bit of a pivot. How'd you come to do that?
Well, basically, I didn't do very well at school. It was called Year 10, but I love science, but I was a rat bag at school. And so I went to TAFE to do a science thing part-time, and the guy there said, look, come and do it full-time, and when your friends have their high school certificate, you'll have a chemistry certificate. So I took his advice, and I was the first person to leave in Year 11, and then I got a job at Johnson & Johnson, and was a lab technician, and from that I moved to a quality control manager for parachutes just by going to an interview saying quality control of raw materials for Johnson & Johnson, quality control for parachutes. I got the job, right?
I don't even want to know how you quality control test a parachute. So, Jackie, how
Because I didn't. So then, and then I got a corporate job with computers. Travelled the world, set up logistics in China, Singapore. Logistics wasn't even a qualification. In my day. And I got the job, and then I got retrenched twice, and I thought, what did I want to do when I was 16? And I thought, I wanted to be a police officer. And I'm sick of being retrenched because I've got two mortgages. Boo-hoo, I'm a boomer, yes. Hate me.
Sounds like you're still a rat bag, 40, Jackie.
And at 45... At 45, I joined the New South Wales Police, and from having office corporate jobs, I had to learn to run and jump because there's no concession being a 45-year-old woman when you're doing a 20-metre sprint and 25 push-ups. And, and the police force as a career is great because you've got one employer and you can be a photographer, a diver, a detective, a forensic. The police force is a great, and they start off at $92,000. They come from stacking shelves at Woolworths straight out of school into a $92,000 a year job.
Well, really, Jackie, I hope they cut you a check for the ad that you've just given them on ABC Radio National. Thank you so much for the call. It sounds like you've had a very varied career. Couple of you also texting me this morning. Bruce says, I'm thinking of changing careers out of academia after dealing with long-term contract uncertainty and a traumatic death in the family. And another says, not only am I aging out of my work of 30 years, I'm in an industry that was already on the decline and fast being replaced by AI. I'm in the process of transitioning my long career in TV graphics to disability care. After some months, I've finally secured a couple of clients, and so far, so good. Jane, it's a very mixed picture, isn't it? Some industries are very vulnerable to change, and others, like Jackie's sort of saying, come work for the police force, you've got a job for life.
The police force is fabulous. I've done a lot of work with police officers, and they are absolutely wonderful people. And normally it's because they're following their true career anchor of dedication to a cause or service to make a difference. But that's a wonderful career path. And so now when people are feeling concerned about their careers, the best thing that they could do is to take a step back and think, what is it that really used to make my heart sing? What can I do that is enjoyable to me, and also I'm pretty highly skilled in, or I'm really willing to learn how to be good at that? And that's a very good start when you're thinking about making a change and feeling a little bit stuck.
Jane, you mentioned a phrase just then, a career anchor. What do you mean by that?
We all have a career anchor that pulls us in a certain direction, and there are eight anchors. One is technical functional anchor. Another one is general managerial, autonomy, entrepreneurial creativity, dedication to a cause or service, which is my top anchor. It's kind of off the charts with when it comes to anchors. Lifestyle, security, or pure challenge. So those are eight anchors, and all of us have got one anchor that pulls us in a certain direction, but we don't know what it is. And I didn't learn what mine was until I actually became a career coach. And then I realized, this is why I feel like I'm home. And Dr. Edgar Sheen was the one who actually identified anchors, and he followed the career of 44 graduates from the Sloan School of Management for 12 years. And he found that those who stayed true to their anchor were earning more and were more satisfied and happy in their lives and careers, whereas those who veered away from their anchor because someone said, oh, here's a promotion, or here's some more money, or why don't you take this job? And they kind of meandered off the anchor. They found that they were having a mid-career crisis. So it's one of the things that I always like to work on with my clients first off, because when you know what your anchor is, when you're going to make a decision, you can ask yourself, am I veering away from my anchor or am I moving towards it? And it enables you to make the right choices.
Glenn, you've got a similar thing that you do with values framework.
Yeah, it is really similar. Like, it's potato, potato. Obviously, James is more polished because it's me we're talking about. But in our career book, we kind of started with, if you do anything first, find out what your values are, and let's try and pin our work to our values, aka what are our anchors. So for me, my top four values are autonomy, flexibility, honesty, and communication. I cannot be told what to do. I don't think I could ever work with someone again because I just want to set my own path. Now, for the next person in line, it could be, I need security and I hate people. Well, there might be a job at the ATO cubicle on a spreadsheet for you that you'll be as happy as Larry. So I just think we need to go back to our anchors. But what I wanted to pick up at the start of the chat, and even Jackie the caller, Jane, you talked about networking, right? And Jackie talked about, I did this interview, I put myself out there. There is an undertone here about risk taking. Now, for Jane, me listening to that, networking, that's not a risk. For the next person in line, you want me to go out where I don't know anyone and put myself out there and network? That could be the biggest risk in the world for somebody. And what I want to encourage people to do is potentially look at different things we might have to do and start to practice and use our risk muscle. So it might be a risk for you to call in sick, even though you're at the hospital on a trolley, right? No, you're allowed to do that. It's actually objectively not a risk to call in sick. So I want to encourage people in their career to practice little things that they think are risks, and almost violate the risk and take it and just really get used to taking risks, because we will have to put ourselves out there at some point.
Do you know what really shines out to me from both of those comments that you've just made is this idea of taking time to know yourself. So you've got to have some bandwidth, and you've got to have some time to be like, what are my anchors? What do I consider to be a risk? What are my values? And that's actually like work that you have to invest in. Jane, how do you even have that conversation with yourself?
Okay. Well, the most important thing is to think of yourself holistically rather than your career. Because even though we spend, about 90,000 plus hours in our lives working. So if we're working somewhere where we're miserable, it's going to be not a very happy life. So you need to think, okay, my career is one part of my life, and if you think about your career, what about your finances? And Glenn, you're the expert there when it comes to the finance side of things. Then you need to think about, what about my relationships? What about my physical environment that I'm in? Because that can affect how happy and satisfied we feel too. And also, what is it about work that really makes me feel I'm a part of something that's important? And if you assess each aspect of your life, then you're able to find out what's missing, what you might be tolerating, what's okay, what's not okay. And once you've identified the things that are missing, you can then decide, what do I need to do in order to overcome that? And that makes it much easier, because you take little pieces one at a time to help. Once you've understood and took this life inventory, the next thing is values, exactly as Glenn said, because our values drive us. And if we veer away from our values, we'll always feel that little niggling discontent. But then we also need to take a step back and think about, what can I do? What are my skills? What am I really good at? But not only where you have a high competence, but also, what do I really like doing? Mm. Because if you marry the high competence with the high enjoyment, That's a sweet spot, isn't it? And when you really enjoy something and you're really good at it, when you talk about it, especially in job interviews, the passion starts to come through. And identifying that is one of the most important things, because once you know, I really love this and I'm really good at it, then where will it fit if you're thinking about making a career change? And am I using these skills in my current role sufficiently? Because if you say you're really good at analytics, but you hate it, and you're always doing analytics and it's big data and that's the thing that you have to do all the time, but you're not enjoying it, over time you're going to feel so burnt out, and eventually you'll probably resign, or you'll leave, or you'll stop doing a good job at that thing that you hate doing but you happen to be good at. And usually in schools, our teachers say, oh, you're really good at this, this could be your career path. But I always think, no, take a step back and think about the interests, enjoyment, as well as ability. And that way you can make better decisions. And finally, the last little bit of the puzzle is, what motivates you? Do you like working on your own in a cubicle at the ATO? You know, or do you like being able to travel for your work? Or do you like being with people? Do you like to influence people? Do you enjoy selling? Or would you rather really be analyzing something and coming up with wonderful answers to critical problems? Everyone's got different motivators. Some people just want to have a window view and look at the Harbour Bridge when they go to work. That could be a motivator as well. For me, a motivator is not having to commute. I used to commute 1.5 hours when I was living and working in London, 1.5 hours into the city, 1.5 hours back, simply because of the traffic. And I realized I can't do 3 hours travel a day. And so now, with the rise of remote working, it works very well for me. But when I was still going into the city, I had to make sure that the commute was less than 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. So little things like that, they could be small things or big things that motivate you. Take a life inventory, understand your values, know where your skills and knowledge and enjoyment lie, know what motivates you, and then what is it that you have achieved in your career so far that is proof in the pudding that you're actually good at it? So did you save money? Did you improve profits? Did you streamline a process? Did you manage a crisis? You know, lots of different things that you could have done where there's an actual tangible benefit. And then when you market yourself, people know, oh, you do get results and you're not just talking off the top of your head.
Well, talking off the top of my head is my career, Jane, so thanks for that. No, you are listening to Life Matters on ABC Radio National. I'm chatting with Jane Jackson, a career management coach, and Glenn James, host of the Money, Money, Money podcast and author of Sort Your Career Out and Make More Money. Who doesn't want that? We're talking about getting unstuck with your career today. You're sending me your texts. Monica says, this segment is so timely and interesting. My son is in year 12 and we're discussing what he wants to do after HSC. The career anchor analogy is great. We're going to use this approach in our next discussion about his future career choices.
Oh, yeah. Good.
And Gary says, Gary is not feeling as positive as Monica. Gary says, my career is in the toilet. Values asset descriptor is unbridled optimism. As a 57-year-old male enjoying a varied career as a CPA professional specializing in business change, I have been unemployed since April 2023. The combination of terrible economy, ageism, and now AI have all added to more than a sense of desperation. I have sent 600 plus applications. The job market is more than watertight. AI has depersonalized and transactionalized the recruitment process, and there's no chance to speak with people. I'd love to hear from both of you on how you'd approach someone like this. Briefly, Jane, I might start with you.
Okay. Now, ageism is such a concern. So many people come to me and they say, Jane, you know, am I too old to make a career change? Am I too old to land a job? Now, if you feel that you are too old, then you will be too old. And I feel for you, because having submitted 600 applications and it's not working, we need to understand what is your process in the job search, because if it's just relying on online job boards, it really is currently the least effective way to land a job, because to be honest, AI is writing the job descriptions now. People are using AI for their resumes. So basically, it's AI hiring AI, and it's not really working very well. And one of the biggest complaints that I get from people who come to me and they need help is that they say, I've submitted over 100 applications and I'm hearing absolute crickets. And the important thing is to analyze what the process is that you're going through. Job boards are one way to land a job. Recruiters are another way to land a job. But they should be a small percentage of your time. The largest percentage of your time must be in the networking, just as Glenn mentioned earlier too. And when you are able to expand your network, and I know a lot of people say, oh, you know, you keep talking about networking, but people really don't like networking because they feel that they're putting themselves out there. And as we mentioned earlier, networking is a risk because there is that fear of rejection as well. But if you flip it and you think about how am I going to approach networking so people know the value that I bring to the table, and you become really clear about who you are and what your brand is, because if you are known in your area of expertise and you're well respected, then people are going to start to refer you. And you can take it one step at a time. I don't know how much detail you want
We need to keep it quite brief.
Yeah, because with networking, if you think of it as a process to develop a relationship, ensure that people understand what you bring to the table, and then help them to be able to market you, then that will make it a lot better. I worked with one gentleman who was 52 back in 2002. His name is Russell. He's absolutely amazing. At the time, he'd been in his career for 30 years. There was a redundancy. He told me, Jane, I'm one of the greys. I'm never going to get hired again. He has completely reinvented his career. I had a coffee with him 2 weeks ago. He's 77 now, and he's still in demand, and
Love
he is doing
that.
A lot of consulting.
Glenn, what about you?
Yeah, I've got a lot of sympathy for the situation, but generally I would say similar thing. We need to get an advocate for you, and that could be finding recruiters, like individuals potentially, that have the time, who want good people, and let them be an advocate for you, not an AI machine. If it's an industry that you like, is there an association you can join, go to local events, get out there. Look, it's hard. But I just want to encourage, you know, the questioner to really, like, it is tough, but keep going. It's not easy, but it's worth it. And yeah, just try and get an advocate for you. And it might even be, if you find that, oh, I really want to be in, I'll make something up, customer service at wherever, go to the local club, RSL, whatever, and say, hey, can I volunteer here? I'll do a day a week, don't care. Like, we just have to get out there. It's not easy, but it's worth it.
Mm. I want to talk a bit about the money side of things, Glenn. That's your patch. And it's all very well and good to say, stop it, ordering Uber Eats and do what you love. But there sometimes is a mismatch between what you are good at and love doing and where the money is.
Yeah, I love this. I often say it's a two-edged sword with our job. And for my own staff, I use this analogy. I'm like, okay, one side of the sword, my business is paying for labor to get stuff done, right? So that's literally one side of it. It's like, it's an exchange for value, and that's the marketplace. The other side is, well, you don't work for free either. And it's almost this, if you don't love it, well, you're not going to stay around anyway. But if you hated your job and you hated your life, and someone said, well, we'll give you 50 grand pay rise, that's not going to work. Mm. So it is this two-edged sword. So it really just goes back to, can we first find, and I wrote it down as, before Jane said it, we've stolen each other's homework. What are we good at and what do we like doing? Then let's get into that vibe. Then we'll chase the money. Now, it's all well and good to say that. We have to make sure that we're in a financial foundation to start with. And that just means, if you're 20, sure, I'll go and volunteer and do 2 days a week for chicken feed and all that stuff, all good. If we're 55 or 57, It could be a 2, 3, 4 year strategy to the work that you love. It will just take longer. But I just want to encourage people, if you've got a 15-year-old that's listening, tell them to look at what they're good at and what they like doing and hone in on that. It's no more learn to code, bro, because the AI is doing the coding. Maybe the humanities are coming back. I mean, my local barber's going to have a job.
On the text line, Margaret says, best job security, midwives and undertakers. See them in.
Absolutely.
See them out. And Kimmy says, I'm a recently retired midwife of 40 years. I was so privileged to have a job that I loved. There was never a day that I didn't want to go to work. So I'm interested to know as well, Glenn, though, like, it's easy to have a positive attitude at work if you are feeling good about how much money is in your bank account. So it kind of goes both ways.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's it. It's like on a human level, right, if you're rocking up to somewhere and your workplace or employer does not value you and just sees you as that number, that's a problem. It's even a bigger problem if you're getting paid crap respectively to the market. So I think at all times you have to put you and your family first. I reckon at all times you need to be just seeing what's out there and seeing what the market is paying. And a lot of people, like, you might be a school teacher in the Shire and you love your job and you're awesome and wonderful, but you're on a pay band, right? You'd be like, well, I just can't get more money because I'm on a pay band. We've now stepped into, well, this isn't a J-O-B discussion. This is a career discussion. Mm-hmm. Do we have to then pivot the actual career, not the job, to get more of that money? And I will say, if you are in a workplace, and it's just good to assess, like, the only person looking out for you and your career is the person in your bathroom mirror. Like, that is the only person that cares, actually cares as much as you do. That's that person in the mirror. So I don't know. I just think we always have to be aware of what the market's paying, what's out there. We self-check in. Do I like being a people person? No, people annoy me. Okay, let's find that other role at some point in the next few years.
It's Life Matters on ABC Radio National. I'm with career coach Jane Jackson and money guy Glenn James talking about career stuckness, getting unstuck. On the text line, one person saying, any tips for a late 50s woman who's pretty much spent the last 25 years as a stay-at-home parent? I'm good at cleaning, looking after others and cooking, and I'm so sick of it. Not a career option. I have many interests and feel like I need to make a decision quickly and get back into the workforce. Jane, what do we do?
What are those many interests, I wonder? Because if we can name them, then we can see, is that possible to monetize it? And so I'd love to know, is there any more detail?
No, the text is all we've got going off. But, like, just as a general framework of this feeling of urgency of wanting to get back in, and then also, I suppose, balanced with taking the time to find out what really is going to suit you.
Yeah, okay. Now, if you've been a stay-at-home mum for many, many years, there's going to be that anxiety because you think, oh, I haven't been in the workforce for so long. Who's going to hire me? But you've gained so many skills being a stay-at-home mum because you've been organizing, you've been communicating, you've been influencing, you've been getting the job done. So you need to think, okay, these are my transferable skills. What are the sorts of roles that require those skills? But combine that with which are the industries that I might be interested in? Are you in, if you're not interested in healthcare because you've had enough of caring for people, you know, are you interested in the fashion industry or are you interested in hospitality or are you interested more in the finance sector? So think about where those interests are, and then just a really easy way to get started is go through Seek and look at the different industries and the different types of roles that are being advertised. If you go through a number of job descriptions, you'll see that some pop out at you and you think, oh, that sounds interesting. I can do a few of these things, but not all of them. Then save that one, maybe print it out, then have a look at other roles that keep popping up that capture your attention. What you'll find is there'll be a common thread as you go through each of these roles and analyze them. And it might be that one of them has said, oh, communication skills or the ability to influence is important. And then some of the other roles that you've saved also have that similar skill set. That will give you a little bit of an idea to start off with as to the types of roles that are appealing to you. That's step one. Then after that, it's going to be, how are you going to market yourself with regard to writing a resume, setting up a LinkedIn profile, etc.
On the text line, Elizabeth says, this reminds me of the Japanese concept of ikigai, where you try to find the intersection between four aspects: what you're good at, what you enjoy, what is beneficial for the world or community, and what you can get paid for. Elizabeth says,
absolutely.
I see many septuagenarian and even octogenarian academic scientists still happily doing research, usually unpaid, because they've found this sweet spot, which, yeah, Glenn, I wanted to sort of go, do you have to get paid for everything? Is it okay to do stuff that doesn't bring you money?
No, you do what you want, basically, on this planet. But it might come down to, well, the reality is I've got a mortgage or rent, or I've got electricity bills, and I don't have enough money from investments to pay for that. So, ta-da, it needs to be employment income, right? So there's that basic thing there. But one thing I would say is, if you are working, like my parents, great example. Hello, if you're listening in Brisbane. They're probably not. But, you know, mum and dad worked for years, and it was this, because we get in these mindsets, right? They're in their 70s now. And it's like, you do know that the money isn't the problem. You've got the money. You could retire tomorrow. But all the other stuff came in, and this is like the de-ramping from work. And that's the change of habits and behaviors and the fear that, well, we have to work to have income. And I just think everything's a slow process. The older we get, the slower that we are to change habits and behaviors and mindsets. And yeah, if you have all the money in the world, please, you are still allowed to go and work for an income if you want to do that.
Jay?
That's what I would say to that question.
Jane, do you want to speak to that?
Yes, definitely. If you want to volunteer because it gives you the pleasure of being able to assist people and benefit the community, that's a great thing. The thing is that ikigai is one of the most beautiful concepts. And if you can marry that, you will feel so happy to know that what you do is actually of benefit. You can get paid for it. You can earn a living. The most important thing, though, is that we all need to pay our bills at the end of the day. So looking for something that's going to bring us joy every day is fabulous. But if we don't have the money to be able to put food on the table, then we're going to feel really anxious. So you need to see where are they actually hiring now? And you'll find that there are specialized fields, hands-on fields, healthcare, engineering, and sales are seeing major growth, even though in other areas, people are thinking, oh, you know, for example, data analytics, AI is now doing it. So going for it, like in the past, I think Glenn mentioned earlier, you know, coding, you'll always have a job. Well, no, you won't now. So you need to think, if I need money, where can I be hands-on so that I can bring in some money to be able to pay the bills? Once you can pay the bills, then you can start to think about what's higher meaning, what's more important? Because with Maslow's hierarchy of needs, food and shelter is number one. After that, then you can start to think about, okay, how can I gain additional knowledge and where can I get more meaning in my life so I'm at this perfect place of happiness?
Glenn, if you are sort of going, I want a career change down the track, how do you build up the cushion that gives you the space to do that financially?
Oh, gosh. Well, I think it goes back to what I would say generally 101, regardless of career. I talk about in my Sound Financial House having four foundations. The first one is we're consumer debt free. So we're not doing personal loans, car loans. We've got an emergency fund, so a bit of cash behind us. We might have a spending plan or budget, some insurances for income and death and our wills and estate plan and all that stuff. But I think we just have to, regardless of whether we want to change careers in the future or we're happy with life, we just need to pay attention to our money, have some type of system, have some rules of thumb. We want an emergency fund. It might be we're saving up as an opportunity fund. And that's no different than someone saving up because we're going to take a little bit of time out of the workforce to grow the family. Or okay, I need to save up, try over the next 3 years, get $40,000 because I know when I transition to a new role, it might be a $15,000, $20,000 pay cut. Mm. It's the bow and the arrow. The bow feels like it's going backwards to start with, but oh no, baby, we're getting ready to go. There's going to be a period of time where you may have to go backwards to go forwards. And the only way to do that is to prepare. But also, you want to be having these good financial hygiene habits in your life regardless.
So, Jane, if someone's listened to this and gone, okay, tonight I'm going to sit down with a piece of paper and a pen and I'm going to have a come to Jesus moment with myself and my career, briefly, what do they do today?
Okay, today, assess what makes you tick. Number one, I know we've harped on about this so much with regard to values, but it is foundational. Once you have a solid foundation, then you can market yourself. So assess what really makes you tick, the values that drive you, the skills that you currently possess, the level of enjoyment of those particular skills, because they're the sweet spot. Analyze what have you done in your roles to date that have had a positive impact, such as you might have noticed, this is a really wasteful procedure. There's a better way to do it. It might be very simple, but because you implemented it, you've actually saved time, manpower, and money. So those are the accomplishments. They don't have to be millions of dollars worth of accomplishments. They can be small, but it's proof that there was a problem, you took specific actions, and you solved it. Write all of those down. There'll be a confidence booster for you. And armed with all that information, then you can start to think about, how can I put it into my resume and into my LinkedIn profile and start to build your personal brand? That way you'll start to attract the opportunities that you desire.
Jane, Glenn, thank you so much. So much wisdom being shared today. Jane Jackson is a career management coach with more than 2 decades of experience. She's the host of Your Career Podcast and the author of Navigating Career Crossroads, How to Thrive When Changing Direction. And Glenn James is the host of My Millennial Money Podcast, the Money, Money, Money Podcast, the author of Sort Your Career Out and Make More Money. He worked for 15 years as a financial advisor and now runs a media company. And I've so enjoyed reading your texts today too. Some really good advice in there. Kay says, excellent advice on the show so far. I'm a careers advisor at high school. It's worth adding to the comment, retell your 15-year-old, to tell them to seek work experience from their careers advisor while they have the opportunity, particularly if they're not interested in trades. Many students believe work experience is just for trades and so turn their nose up at it. They spend 4 years at uni only to discover they hate the job at the other end. Well, I hope that this has been a useful chat for you. If you have enjoyed a chat about money and jobs and careers, may I recommend one of the other shows here on ABC Radio National, This Working Life with Lisa Leong, which you can find on ABC Listen. But please don't go quite yet, because coming up next here on Radio National, the aunties will be in to discuss the case of the dog sitting assignment gone gory.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
I'm sorry, Wiz. I have to tell them.
No!
Hi, I'm Andy Lee, and this is Wiz.
Lost.
And the show he doesn't want you to watch is back.
No, it's not.
With more adventures you definitely shouldn't go on. And more monsters you really shouldn't laugh at. And more ways to annoy Wiz.
Oh, how funny.
The irresistible family favourite is back with brand new episodes.
Do not watch this show.
And do not stream all the episodes.
That's right.
Right now on ABC iView.
When an offer to help out your kid's new partner starts to get costly and bloody, it's time to ask Auntie. And to clean up the mess today, we have Aunties, writer and comedian Irvi Majumdar and head writer for the ABC's Gruen, James Colley. Irvi and James, welcome back to Ask Auntie.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, great to be here.
James, I want to start with you. What are your thoughts on the relationship between a parent and their kid's new girlfriend? Should it be a close one?
Now, new is probably the most important term here. I think that I would say that just being vaguely welcoming and nice and hospitable and, let's be clear, normal is all that you want from your new partner, like for your family's relationship with your new partner. don't be too welcoming either, because, you know, let your child make that decision before they start appearing in family portraits. But I think just be normal about it is, I would say, my standard advice in this segment.
Mum, please just be normal. Irvi, how do your parents treat new people you're dating?
Good question. I pretty much just don't tell them. There's no point telling my parents unless I'm like going to be married and having kids soon. Like, so I feel like
I'm finally ready to introduce you to my husband of 10 years.
Yeah. Right. They're just like, what is dating? Like, to them, that concept is not a thing. The traditional Indian people. So yeah, I just, I've lied a lot. Yeah, is my answer.
That's the spirit. Look, we've got a letter today. I want to hear how things work in this family. So Janice writes, my son's only been dating his girlfriend for 6 weeks, but things are moving fast, serious enough now that they're off on their first weekend away together. So Irvi, you wouldn't be telling mum and dad at this stage.
No, but I'd be at a friend's house.
Does this sound okay to you?
To be going on a, I feel like a weekend away is not that crazy after 6 weeks if you're going, if you're like really dating. Did they just say that they're 21 before as well?
No, I think you're just self-projecting there.
Okay, yeah, all right, so we don't know how old they are.
Early days here. James, any red flags for you?
No, look, the only red flag is the bit that is unsaid to the parent here. They are 6 weeks into a relationship and they're going for a weekend away. That's because they live in a share house with thin walls and they're doing a favour to everyone else. Don't ask too many questions.
Fair enough, fair enough. Well, this is Ask Auntie. Things are going to get a bit more complicated as we move on. Janice continues, my son's girlfriend's two dogs, Sox and Roop, needed a sitter. They can be a bit of hard work. They come with a lot of rules. But I said yes because I figured the couple deserved the time away. Night one went fine. Night two, mid-dinner, I heard a commotion. I ran out to find Socks had attacked Roop and there was blood everywhere. So this has escalated quite quickly.
Yeah.
James, do you have thoughts on dogs and dog owners who have a lot of rules?
Well, I'm a dog owner. I can't say my dog has many rules other than he is a little himbo and he can't be trusted to make his own decisions. But I would say that with it, it kind of depends what the rules are for this situation, because if the rules are, you know, they absolutely cannot be in the same room with each other because they hate each other and they will fight, that's a rule you should really listen to. If it's like he needs four pats on a brush counterclockwise before going to bed every evening, you can probably relax that a little.
Fair, fair. So we don't know what the rules are. But Irvi, if you know that the dogs can be work and you offer to dog sit, is it on you to deal with any consequences that fall?
I think it's a tricky one. I think she shouldn't have said yes. And I also think it's weird for the new girlfriend to ask. So, like, yeah, you kind of want to make a good impression. It's only 6 weeks in and not even, I mean, I don't know if there was like a money exchange or what, but yeah, maybe just like complicating things too early, in my opinion.
Interesting. Well, that particular horse is absolutely bolted because not only are the dogs there, there's blood everywhere. James, you've walked outside, you see two dogs in a bloodbath. What's your like immediate reaction?
What's my reaction? Wonderful. Great.
I'm so happy.
I completely agree with Irvi here. Like, this is a real, does she have any friends? This is not a mother of your partner job. This is a, like, a kennel, firstly, but also, like, for this exact reason, if you have a very troublesome dog, that's real too much to put on someone who you've known for 6 weeks, mum. That's a lot of work.
And not even just one, you're going two. It's not even just like, you know, it's a lot of work.
Well, yeah, so it's a lot of work and then it turns out that it was a lot of money because Janice goes, I couldn't reach my son or his girlfriend, so I paid the emergency vet bill myself. Oh. It was thousands of dollars. Roop ended up losing an eye when I finally got through. She didn't say thank you. She said it was my fault and she's not paying a cent back. Now it's wrecked my relationship with her. My son's stuck in the middle and I'm the one out of pocket for a dog fight that happened while I was doing them a favour. Yikes, I think is my professional reaction to this. Irvi, where do you stand here?
I just feel like the nerve is a lot. Like, I don't know. I'm like, I guess with my cultural background and stuff, like you're meant to like respect your elders and I just don't think it's very respectful. I just think it's plain wrong.
plain wrong to be ungrateful.
To be ungrateful, to not pay back, and yeah, just like the way that she's treating a querent.
James, I'm interested to sort of, if we could try to put ourselves in the girlfriend's shoes here. You've gone off on a weekend away, you've given all your rules over, and you come back and it's like, ah, please pay me thousands of dollars. Is it justified to be all like, excuse me, what the hell?
I would say that if I lent my dog to anyone and when I returned they had fewer eyes than when I left them, yeah, I would be asking questions. Yes, absolutely. Mm. I feel there is, this might seem callous, there is no good solution here. This is a sunk cost fallacy. Would you not pay a few thousand dollars to remove someone you don't have a future with from your child's life? I absolutely would. So I would say he's going to break up. You got a ghost. In like 3 years, this becomes a very funny story to tell his new girlfriend at Christmas. But other than that, there is no point that you forget. There's no point during you forget your mother-in-law took away your dog's eye. It's just done. It's settled.
Which family has the funnier Christmas story? The one, Janice's family or the ex-girlfriend's family?
Oh, Janice's family, because they don't have to look at the one-eyed dog at the end of the table.
And it's, I mean, we don't know everything about this. Like, what are the rules that were broken? If there was any rules that were broken, like, who's actually at fault? If it was just like a freak accident, then is it really, do we really even need to? I mean, obviously it sucks for the dog, but like, no one is at fault if it wasn't like breaking the rules.
James, I do want to invite you to go back in time, not that far, just to when you would have been this young fella in a new relationship with someone that you're maybe pretty excited about, and mum is being weird about it. Like, you're stuck in the middle as the boyfriend here. How does that feel?
Oh, I have been in that situation, and it's never terrific. And also, it's just, there's no good way out, because it's cruel to say it this side, and I'm sure it's a beautiful early love between them both, but one of these people is disposable, and it's unfortunately not your mother. And I know there are times in your life where you absolutely wish it was your mother, but it is not. And you find that out the hard way at some point in your life.
Irvi, you mentioned your cultural background before. If this had happened in your family, like, how would it have played out?
I think, it's an interesting. So if my parents accidentally, I think I would be angry, but I don't think I would be kind of like, if my partner was giving my parents attitude in that way, that would kind of be an ick for me.
So on the text line, a couple of people have weighed in as well. One says, I think he got off light, run. And another is, my mantra on new partners is to be Switzerland, play a straight bat, relationship with my children is paramount. Well, we can't tell Janice to jump in a time machine and go back and say, no, I'm not going to dog sit for you. Mm. What do we tell her, Irvi?
I think, yeah, I mean, that last response is pretty mature. Like, I guess if you're out of pocket a few thousand dollars, but to make your son and your relationship better, maybe we just need to get over that for a bit.
What about you, James?
Yeah, I would say getting some dog insurance would be a nice Christmas present. I just don't see a good resolution here, sorry.
Well, Janice, I'm sorry we won't be able to give you a bit more comprehensive advice, but thank you so much, James and Irvi, for chatting with me today. James Colley is the head writer on Gruen for the ABC. Comedian Irvi Mumjadar is performing her new show, Miss, at the Comedy Republic in Melbourne on July 18. It's for teachers or anyone who went to school. You can get your tickets online. And if you have a social dilemma or a crisis of conscience that needs talking out, you can see how seriously we take these scenarios you send us. You can email us, lifematters@abc.net.au, because you are listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. Well, we are nearly out of time together today. I've come to you from Jagera and Turrbal land. And yes, you may have realised that it is a Friday and it's me, Tegan Taylor, talking to you and not Beverly Wang. Bev will be back with you again next Friday, but I have to say it has been fun hanging out with you an extra day this week while she takes a break. And I will be back with you again on Monday. It will be time for a second instalment of our special series, The Grandparent Trap, which is all about what it means to be a grandparent in 2026. We're going to be talking about parenting the second time around when you find yourself as your grandkids' full-time carer. You'll hear from a woman who is raising all seven of her grandkids, Some days it's a gift. Other days, her favourite part of the day is what she calls shower cry time.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.